Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome to today's session on the connection process streamlining. I just wanted to go over a couple of logistical items before we get kicked off. Rich, if you want to kick ahead to the next slide or two. So just for everyone's awareness, we are recording the audio of this session, and we will be posting it to our engagement page on our website within the next few business days here. So that should be available for you if you want to refresh or are unable to attend for the whole session. If you have any concerns, if you want to jump to the next slide, Rich, about the recording of the audio or any questions on that, feel free to reach out to the information provided here. Next slide. I know everyone's done this a million times, but just a reminder, for Q&As, we have two Q&A portions of this presentation. You can raise your hand and I'll unmute your audio and you can ask your question. And obviously we'd like that interaction, so we encourage you to do that. You can also type your Q&A into the Q&A window, and other participants can upvote, and we will be answering the top questions first in there as well. And if you're joining us via webinar or joining the webinar via telephone, you can use star 9 to raise your hand, and we'll be able to see that, and then star 6 to unmute and mute on your end. And so with that, I think I'll hand it over to our Vice President of Grid Reliability, Rob Davidson.
Great. Thanks, Jen. Good morning, everyone. Yeah, so on behalf of the ISO, I just would like to welcome and thank everyone for joining us today as we kick off our engagement for streamlining of the ISO connection process. For those of you that don't know me, my name is Rob Davidson, and I'm the Vice President of Grid Reliability, Projects and Planning. So relatively new to the role, so became the Vice President in February as Dennis Fralick, who was our previous Vice President of Grid Reliability. He is moving into retirement for us now. So so going forward, this initiative and the ISO connection process, they're my accountabilities under the executive team here at the ISO. I would like, before we get going, I'd like to take a moment to introduce the ISO staff that we have with us today. First of all, I would actually like to introduce the Director of Customer Grid Access, and so that is Amir Motamedi. Amir started in this new role at the beginning of May. That was my previous role at the ISO, so I'd just like to take a moment, Amir, just to turn your mic on and maybe say hi to everyone and introduce yourself.
Good morning, everyone. As Rob said, my name is Amir Motamedi. I am the Director of Customer Grid Access with the ISO. I started in May. My background and experience is all in power system operation and planning and engineering. I initially joined the ISO in 2011, and I had different roles. And I was with the ISO until 2021. Then I left for a year and a half, and I was the general manager of power system development company, and now I'm back to the ISO in this capacity. And looking at the names, I've had the opportunity to interact with a lot of folks on this call, and I'm looking forward to continue the interaction in my new capacity. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Amir. I have noticed just on some of as far as performance of the internet, I have noticed on my side I've been getting some signals that it's just a weak internet connection on that. So, Jen, maybe if you can keep in tune. So if I start to break up, you can kind of let me know. But hopefully we get a good stable internet connection. And of course, I think you've met Jen. Many of you know Jen. Jen, she works in our communication team, and she will be our Zoom host today. And then we have a couple of presenters with us today. So Steve Mantrap. So Steve is one of our two program managers that are responsible for the program management function within the customer connection projects at the ISO. And he's going to be one of our presenters today.
Good morning, everyone.
And then we also have Rich Black. Rich is our manager of our program support group at the ISO and is responsible for our ISO connection process and the associated change management on that process. So Rich is also here to present today.
Good morning, everybody.
So that's it from the ISO staff. Just quickly from a stakeholder perspective, I do see we have over 100 participants in this space. So thank you very much. Look forward to today's discussion. From a stakeholder engagement perspective, for those of you that have had the opportunity to work with me will understand that stakeholder engagement, it's a core value for the ISO, and it's a foundational value for me and our team. We believe that engaging in stakeholders, understanding the different perspectives and challenges are really core to delivering the high quality work to our stakeholders. So today we're going to discuss a very important topic, and this being the ISO connection process. And today we're looking forward to answering your questions on the material, as well as looking forward to gathering your feedback during a planned June workshop. And you'll see that later on at Rich's Minute Doc Too. We're planning on a workshop in June, as we really embark on engaging in streamlining of our connection process. So just a couple of things on scope for today's session that I want to touch on. So today's session is going to be focused on the ISO connection process and the implementation of that process within the current regulatory framework. I want to avoid getting sidetracked with any discussions on questions of existing projects or active proceedings. And you are all likely aware that there's also an active engagement going on with the DOE on the transmission policy review engagement. We obviously don't want to bring those items into discussion for this session either. The other thing that I recognize here is that congestion risk is an area of interest. We are currently seeing pockets of congestion, particularly in the south part on the 138 kV system. We're seeing pockets of congestion, but I have set some time aside at the end of our session, recognizing I think that's an area of interest, where I'll provide just some context to that and set, you know what direction the ISO is doing with respect to the congestion risk. So with that, some of the key messages for takeaways that I have for today I really want you to take away from here and highlight up front that and you'll have seen through the material if you read it in advance, that the current volume of projects or system access service requests and the associated increased complexities that go along with the studies that we're engaging with today, they're far outpacing the ISO's resources that we have. Things have changed dramatically over the last several years, and this is not unique to Alberta. This is also a challenge that is being faced across all ISOs, particularly across North America. This is something that we have observed over the past several years, and we have been working very hard on implementing changes as we've been watching this progress. And I'll pause just to talk about a couple of those changes from awareness. If you recall back in 2016 and 17, with the inrush of renewable projects, we implemented a stage two on hold process, and that was really to help provide flexibility for developers to pause on the connection process. Around that same time, we also started seeing significant churn in stage three on studies, and so we introduced the concept of project inclusion criteria, and that was to help reduce the rework that was being done in stage three for some efficiencies. Obviously, our new tariff, the ISO's new tariff that we have, so that includes advancement of system access service agreements and the generating unit owner's contribution. So the advancement of that within our process, that really goes to help improve project certainty and efficiencies in our connection and system planning studies. So we obviously have implemented those and made those changes. And we've made several other changes. You're probably aware of the interactive maps on our project list that we put on our website, as well as recently launching our transmission capability maps. Are all very significant improvements. And one that you may or may not be aware of, but recently through 2021 and then into 2022, we have done an internal reorganization or reconfiguration of the ISO project teams. And so we're really trying to change our model, how we deliver projects, so we have a more consistent set of project teams for delivery of ISO resources and efficiencies. So we're doing a bunch of stuff to try to improve the efficiencies, However, we believe that we have reached a point that we believe that material changes are needed to the connection process. Given all the efficiencies that we've tried, we're at a point now where we think material changes need to be made, and we need to really think critically about this. So now we believe is the opportunity to streamline our connection process and launch this stakeholder initiative and get your views on what potential material changes could be provided for the overall efficiency of our connection process. So we are planning workshops later in June, and Rich will talk to that with the industry, where we can really dive into the opportunities. So in preparation for that workshop, today we are going to share with you a little bit of our initial thinking as to some of the opportunities that we see, and we'll be looking to get your feedback and look forward to hearing from you on whatever creative ideas that you may have that can help result in what we believe, and look forward. Just before we get going, I just want to highlight that we recognize the challenges that help result in changes. And I want to take this time to acknowledge some ISO staff, on the connection team. They've been working, tirelessly behind the scenes, and doing an amazing job at executing system access service requests. Not only as a result of the change and trends within the industry, but also continuing to perform at such a high level through this once-in-a-lifetime pandemic. So I'm extremely fortunate to have an incredible team of dedicated and highly knowledgeable staff who are doing their absolute very best during these difficult times. And just wanted to make everyone aware of that, and do request and appreciate your patience with our team, and as we continue to work through the challenges that are in front of us. So, Rich, you can move on to the next slide, please. There we go. Thank you. Yeah, so objectives for today, they're obviously shown on the slide here. And so we want to share with industry some statistics and some graphs that are going to highlight the changing landscape of the projects that we're seeing, as well as the current state. What's our current reality? What are we seeing from challenges and those impacts to the ISO? And then we're going to use the back half of the session to kick off our engagement with industry and share our plans to improve the connection process and prepare for the next engagement session. Next slide, please, Rich. So from an agenda perspective, so Steve is going to walk us through the changing landscape with regard to system access service requests and the challenges and impacts that we are facing at the ISO. And then he's going to turn the floor over to Rich, who he'll be discussing our plan for streamlining the connection process and the engagement opportunities. We will have breaks in there to do a Q&A after Rich's or Steve's presentation and after Rich's. And so from there, they'll turn the floor back over to me, and I'll spend the last, before we close, I will spend the last few moments just talking about the congestion risk component to that too. So with that, we should then be done at around, right around noon. Next slide, and I think it might be Steve's turn. Yep, so that's Steve. My turn. I'll turn the floor over to you.
All right, thanks, Rob. Yeah, good morning, everyone. So to kick things off, I'd like to spend a little time on the background behind the connection process and the SASR volumes that we've been seeing over the years. We'll review some of the resource level data and then talk a little bit about the increasing connection process durations that we're finding as well, specifically as it relates to project durations. So next slide, please. Okay, so just a bit of a background on the connection process. History. So the connection process as we know it today was built back in 2010, really responding to a high volume and a need for a quick and efficient access to the grid. As I understand it, the process was developed in 2010, but there was about a two-year window where things stabilized and the project list was effectively transitioned into what we see it as today. So some of the subsequent slides that you're going to see will all be based on a history going back to 2012, which was effectively when the project list and the process had stabilized. So just keep that in mind as we kind of walk through the next steps. But that's a bit of a high level on the connection process. Okay, next slide, please. Okay, so this graph really shows the distribution of project types in the project list over the last 10 years. As you can see, a number of different colors in here represent the different project types, the green and orange being generation, both renewable and non-renewable, the blue referring to load projects, and the purple just rate DTS changes. So as you can see, the first number of years from 2012 into start of 2016 was a relatively stable period. The mix of project types, really heavy on the load-driven project types, and then starting in 2016 when the renewable electricity program kicked off, we really saw a very steep increase in generation applications up until 2019. 2019 was when the REP program was discontinued, and as you can see, there is a very steep decline in generation applications at that point in time. And as we progress into today, we're just under 300 projects today in the project list. We're about at the same point in terms of the project applications that we did see at the peak of the REP program. The difference being, I think, at the time of the REP program is a lot of the projects that we did receive at that time did progress quite slowly as developers were applying for the various REP procurement activities. And this chart also does refer to the connection process, behind the fence, and contract change. Sorry, Rich. There is a question here from Julian, and I can touch on that. Can you please give an example of DTS versus load projects? I believe the DTS project bar, the purple at the very bottom, refers to contract change projects as opposed to discrete load increase projects driven from a market participant. Okay, go to the next slide here. So just a graphic on the project list makeup. So earlier from 2012 into 2016, we saw a very high concentration of load projects. These consisted of new discrete industrial loads or increasing residential loads. The transmission impacts would have been breaker additions or additional transformer additions that were needed to actually facilitate those load increases. And as you can see, very interestingly, once we got into 2016, there was a discrete change to that makeup where the majority of the projects coming into the application process were generation based, and we saw a very distinct decline in load based projects, occurring even to right up to today. So as load continues to get smaller, the amount of load projects get smaller, that's introduced a challenge into integrating generation projects. You can see the makeup of generation has changed from about 36% back in 2012, and now we're seeing about 83% of our projects, our SASRs, are consisting of generation projects. Another graphic just on generation projects specifically. So as we see this shows that generation in terms of megawatts is really at a record high. We're almost at 30,000 megawatts of projects in the connection process, as opposed to about 10,000 back in 2012. So very a steep increase in those projects. As you can see, there was a peak in 2017, 2018 with the renewable electricity program, the REP program, that dropped off slightly, but over the last couple of years, we're seeing a very steep increase, and we've far exceeded that now. We're just under 30,000 megawatts. And as we've seen an increase to the number of projects, the number of SASRs, what we've also been observing over the last few years is a increase to the actual size of those generation applications. Going back to 2012, about 77% of the generation applications coming into the connection process. Now, these are specific to transmission-connected applications. 77% of them were under 200 megawatts. And we can see that that was fairly consistent for a number of years. And over the last 2 to 3 years, we've really seen a drop in those 0 to 200 megawatt size projects and a much steeper increase in larger size applications. So obviously that increases the complexity of those types of projects. They are more difficult to study and integrate into the system. And the larger the project, the greater the impact in the surrounding systems and the impact to other projects that are also progressing in the connection list.
Hey, Steve, I'm just going to add a little context into that slide as well. As you're talking through it, I know it's on transmission interconnection generators, a slide, and you have the next ones on the DERs.
That's right.
I just want to highlight that DER projects, you know, they're small, but they're also very complex from an engineering, you know, study perspective, you know, as well, particularly that the DERs that we're seeing, we see ones that are very large in nature, and so they do have impact on the transmission system. So I don't want you just to take the message here that it's just large generation projects that are more difficult to study. The smaller ones can equally be as impactful as well. And the other thing from a DER perspective that my observations are is they can be quite, from an ISD perspective, they shift around a lot as well. So making studies a lot more difficult from that perspective. So,
yeah, that's a good point.
I just want to throw that context in there, Steve.
Yeah, no, that's good.
Hey, Steve, while we're paused, I wonder if you want to take a moment for Santi might have a question on this slide.
Okay. Is it in the chat?
I'm going to unmute you if you want to ask your question quick.
Okay. Can you hear me, Jen?
Yep.
Great. Thank you guys for the presentation and hosting this session. I maybe want to just take a quick moment to echo, Rob, your initial comments and take a second to appreciate, one, the magnitude of the issue and the amount of work that has been done leading up to this point. I know, you know, it's probably been a challenge given the number of how many projects you've seen come into the queue, trying to manage all of the work, especially during the pandemic. So thank you for all of the work that you guys have done and recognizing that this is an issue that has to be dealt with. And so just maybe preamble to some of the, maybe more of a comment that I have as opposed to a question. Just want to take a minute to say thank you. On this slide, it looks like, as it points out, as the title suggests, that, you know, the size of generators is increasing in terms of, you know, the size of projects that are filing for SASRs. And, you know, while the number of projects is certainly, and obviously the complexity is certainly driving maybe some of the challenges in terms of backlog and placing a strain on your guys' resources, I wonder if it's also worthwhile considering some of the other factors, not just in terms of improvements to the process itself, in terms of the connection process, but other contributing factors to why some of the backlogs are happening. I mean, speaking to just that one slide, I think 13, at least on the public version, you know, with larger generators looking to connect to the grid, you know, one of the things that I wonder if some of them are facing in terms of a challenge, which may be contributing to a backlog and complexity is, you know, the issue of MSSC. And I understand that the ASO is taking a look at that and certainly commend the ASO for doing that. But, you know, I think they're looking at it with, you know, clear vision and holistically. I think things like that, I think we should take a look at it in terms of recognizing contributing factors to the backlog as opposed to just limiting, you know, and focusing on just what we can do in terms of the process itself.
Yeah, no, thanks for that, Santi. Appreciate the acknowledgement as well up front. And, I appreciate that, and I'm sure my team definitely does as well. I think those are things that, you know, I think we'll want when we have our session in June, we'll want to, I think, hear some of those things, on what those contributing factors are. Cause I think it's trying to, we need to really look creatively and get your input, on what you see as some of the contributing factors so that we can look to to find ways to, you know, to address these challenges from that perspective. So, well, thanks for that.
No problem. Yeah, I think it'll be it'll have to be two ways, you know, contributing factors from our end, what we're seeing as kind of challenges to moving the project forward, but also from the ASO side, what are some of those things outside of just the process itself, that might be required or a barrier for some of these things that maybe we'll have to look at outside of the process that we should look at maybe either, acknowledging that, you know, those are constraints and we'll have to work through in the scope of this engagement. But recognizing that that has to be done imminently.
Okay. Thanks for that, Andy.
Yep. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Yeah, Rob touched on this a little bit previously around the DER project. So, you know, just focusing in on the DER specifically and also the energy storage projects. Obviously a very significant spike that kicked off in 2016. I think we might have had one or two DER projects previously to 2016, and that came out in a rapid ascension into the project list. As Rob mentioned before too, that DER projects do add a lot of complexity. Their ISDs do move around quite a bit. They can progress through the process relatively quickly, which causes restudy or at least sensitivities to other projects going through the process. So they do add to a lot of the restudy impacts that we're seeing today as it relates to the current connection process. Energy storage obviously adds another level of complexity too that we're seeing as more energy storage enters into the process, and of course seeing all sorts of different kinds of technology types these days, from battery to pumped hydro to compressed air energy storage, those have started increasing quite substantially over the last year and a half into the process, which certainly is an exciting time for us with that technology and looking to integrate that into the grid. Definitely adds more complexity, of course, as we look to understand these new technology types and look at ways in which they want to behave in the market and participate in the market. That certainly adds to more complexity as well. And in addition to energy storage too, we're also obviously seeing lots of new exciting technologies that are entering in Alberta, whether it's hydrogen and a lot of the coal to gas repowering projects that have taken place over the last few years as well. So all adding to the mix and all adding to the different types of complexity that we're facing within the connection process. So probably is no news to anybody here in Alberta, but our renewable resource rich areas within the province are located in the south and central east part of the province. And as you can see, the interest in renewable projects, is really concentrated in those areas, south and central in particular, for the ISO, as we see these projects come in. Certainly the increased interest in those areas, that certainly adds to the complexity and the additional coordination that's required, specifically when we look at congestion and those sorts of items. It just adds to the complexity of the studies that are required and certainly does take longer to process projects that are bumping up against some of those issues as we have to look at more increased congestion or look at more complicated RAS design for these projects. Certainly takes longer for the teams to process through many of those activities to allow for those developments to occur. And just another thing too, a lot of these projects are locating in areas where there's relatively light loads in the province. Our load centers are of course centered around Calgary, Edmonton, and Fort McMurray. And just happens that our resource for renewable the resource rich areas are in the south and in central, which are kind of the opposite of where our load centers are.
Steve, I'm just going to highlight a little bit some context on the system planning piece too. And so that is a piece of what creates more difficulty when you look at the map and you see where the generation is looking to connect to, whether it's the 138 or 240 in that area. And you can see that the 138 kV system obviously historically designed to service load in that area. And the installation of the generation connecting in there requires coordination with our system planning team from that perspective. And so that obviously creates more complexity, within the process. And so those are some of the things that will, as we look to, change our connection process, how we can critically think to understand those impacts from a system planning perspective and the connection planning and obviously the pace at which generators are looking to connect to it as well. So, but that's some of the, when you see these increase in durations and resources, we do have a small system planning team as well. From that perspective, so I just wanted to highlight that.
Thanks, Rob. Can move to the next slide, please, Rich. Okay, so this outlines some of the observations we're seeing in terms of project change proposals, and these are specific to market participant driven change or market participant submitted change proposals. Typically, we see a lot of in service state changes, in particular on projects, and more projects enter into the system and into our connection process, we're certainly seeing a lot of change associated with those projects. And that obviously impacts work and triggers rework and potentially restudies on projects as in-service date changes. And we know that developers are facing a lot of challenges in the development space, with procurement and issues such as that do drive some of these changes. So, we're of course, recognizing that. So the peer volume is changing and increasing for change proposals. We're seeing, even year to date, I think this year so far, we've received 99 change proposals from the beginning of the year to current. So quite a large number of change proposals coming in that we're having to manage through, and the rate of change per project, of course, is increasing too. The axis on the right hand side refers to the change proposal rate per project. I mean, it's just looking like it's under one per project, which might be a bit misleading, really, when you look at the graphic, because we do have a lot of administrative contract change type projects and equipment change projects that don't see a lot of change proposals associated with them. So, by and large, a lot of the change proposals and a lot of the change driven is more concentrated to the generation type projects in particular. So I think it's a higher volume of change on those projects. And of course, that aligns with just, the development space that we're in Alberta.
Yeah. So Steve, on that, change proposals do have a material impact on the ISO resources. I wanted to really, stress that. And so I think one of the things I would like the industry to think about as we go forward with our June session is any ideas that you might be able to bring forward that can help minimize, the amount of change proposals that move forward within our process. So obviously forward with our June, that can help. You'll have a better understanding as to the rationale and the reasons for the change proposals. And I'm sure certain times they're an important part of a project, but to the extent that we can try to minimize those, would provide significant efficiencies, at least within the ISO's perspective. So, give some thought to that, please.
Good. Just a slide on uncertainty and project cancellations and projects on hold. we see on average about 40, 45 project cancellations a year. Obviously, there was a pretty large spike in 2019 when the REP program ended, about 105 projects or SASRs canceled associated with that. And, certainly as SASRs move through the process and then they may cancel, of course, we do have to process that, and then just getting the project to a point which a decision is made where a project does cancel, there's certainly some effort there that's wasted, and of course on both sides of, from the ISO's perspective and in industry's perspective, and of course that just make also impact other projects that are moving forward in the process and could impact rework associated with that as well. The on hold process, that's been in place since 2017. We have, seen, the number of projects going on hold decreasing over the last few years in particular. We have about 29 on hold currently, so the number is still fairly high. More recently we've seen, projects that are on hold, request to come off and re-enter the process. Certainly the longer projects are on hold, it does create a lot of rework, if they are able to reactivate, and we're able to accommodate reactivation of those projects. So certainly there is that consideration there. Some may not be accommodated for various reasons as well and may have to, cancel and restart. But it just adds another wrinkle, another layer of complexity to the process. Yeah, so I think we've touched upon just the number of SASRs that we've been receiving. We're at a real peak here these days. And certainly over the last number of years, the makeup of the SASRs that we've been receiving has really shifted from being very load dominant to generation dominant. And our connection process really hasn't changed significantly from the point in which it was it's the inception point back in 2010. So big shift in the makeup and types of projects. Connection process has been relatively stable and hasn't changed a lot. Certainly we're seeing larger, more complex projects coming into the process with different technologies, and that's adding certainly unique challenges in looking to integrate those into the system. So at the end of the day, we're definitely at a point which we need to find new ways, new innovative ways in approaching these volumes and these complexities to ensure these projects move forward, and we're all working smarter and we're all being as efficient as possible. So that kind of wraps up a bit of the background and some of the volume information on our SASRs and the workflow that we're seeing. So next, going to talk a little bit about the connection project impacts, to the resource volumes that we're seeing and some of the constraints that we have with respect to our resources. So this first graphic illustrates, the major deliverables that the ISO is undertaking that consumes kind of our resources. And this bar graph, illustrates things, from November of last year to current to May. And it's broken down by the various deliverables that are and activities that are required within each of the stages, stage one, two, and three within our connection process. So as you can see, the actual amount of planned deliverables for each month has been steadily increasing. It's actually about a 65% increase overall from November to May. And what it's telling us is that the requirements of the projects are really starting to outpace, or they really are outpacing the ISO resources. And that could be that's a lot of that's due to the volume, certainly, and just the throughput of SASRs that we're receiving, as well as the complexity of the individual tasks that we have to undertake within that. They're taking longer to process, and therefore the backlog is growing. And yet, you know, our resources are being outpaced by the amount of project requirements. So ideally, you know, you'd want to see this graphic to be flat, the bars all to be even with each other, as opposed to growing like this. It's just showing that the backlog is increasing. Even the stage one, which is actually the kind of the lighter blue at the very bottom, it's a little difficult to even see kind of the impact, but the actual stage one deliverables, the backlog has grown about 550% from November to today. So it's really a significant increase overall. You know, so that's obviously an indication that the amount of work is growing, and the amount of deliverables aren't getting completed due to that volume and that project complexity. So this is showing our increasing project timelines. So I think it's interesting to note, you know, that the project timelines, and that's donated by the green bar, that in weeks, you know, for example, stage zero was the target time frame for stage zero is 2 weeks. Stage one is 8 weeks, 14 and 32. These target timelines were determined back in 2010, 2012 when the connection process was developed. And in those first number of years from 2012 to 2015, you can see the actual timelines are actually decreasing. And that was really in line. And it's interesting because it's in line with the project mix. You know, we were very much load driven projects. The mix of projects were more load based. You know, the load projects typically have very finite in service dates and not a lot of change, not a lot of, activity, you know, so the projects do move relatively quickly. When we see more generation mix come into the picture too, the actual timelines have increased, of course. So, certainly those targets, you know, that were developed back in 2010, 2012, were very aggressive, and it's clear they're not being met right now. So we're actually seeing, certainly a very much an increase, to those targets, in our actuals. And keep in mind this graphic is really just reflective of the connection projects only, not, the behind the fence, projects. The behind the fence projects, did not have timelines, until 2021. We just actually implemented that, early 2021, the timelines for BTF projects. Okay, so you know, we're in a situation where we've got resources allocated across all projects and deliverables, and we're obviously seeing a scenario where we have more scheduled work than we have resource capability. So we're starting to have to decide which items need to have resources assigned and which tasks may need to be pushed out. So I know this conversation is happening internally more and more and more. We're seeing this a lot more over the last couple of years as the backlog builds, and certainly, you know, the industry is seeing those delays as well, starting to see deliverables get rescheduled. So when we're allocating resources, you know, we're looking at a lot of factors, of course. You know, is there float in the project schedule, or what's the critical path look like of the projects? Is there coordination between projects required? That's really having a big impact on the way in which we kind of allocate folks on projects. What's the in-service date? A big one is on change proposals and impacts to change proposals. So if a project does have a change request come in, then of course we have to make a decision whether or not we allocate resources to implementing that change, if that means rework, or if that change needs to be scheduled back in. The actual result of that change needs to be scheduled back into our resource assignment. So we're having these conversations a lot lately, and obviously it's requiring an immediate change to our immediate near-term change to our way in which we allocate resources to projects. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that here on the next slide. I see some chat coming in. I'm not sure if we need to address anything, Jen.
I think Amir is responding to that, but I know that you also had a hand raised if you want to take a quick second to address that.
Okay.
Ed, I'm going to unmute you if you want to go ahead with your question.
Great, thank you. Ed DePelzu from DeepL Consulting. I want to start off by thanking Rob for starting this initiative, because I think it's really important to think about how do you make this process as effective as possible. And obviously it's going through a lot of change right now. And also want to thank your staff, because I know that a lot of them are taking on extraordinary loads and managing somehow to keep the projects moving. So that's very much appreciated by me and my clients. The question that I have is I guess around ISO staffing. And you know, a couple of years ago in the ISO tariff, we suggested to the ISO that you might want to look at a variable fee that could be charged to projects, maybe by stage, so that the ISO would have a variable source of funding. So if the project number of projects increased, then you'd have some fees that could be the fees that people would pay would then perhaps allow the ISO to hire some consultants, or if it was confident that would continue to hire some staff and then help to manage the workload. So while I do see opportunities to optimize things, at the heart of it, though, it might be difficult to overcome some of the challenges in regards to staffing, and just wondered what your thoughts are on, some type of variable fee that could help the ISO in regards to staffing and its workload.
Thanks, Ed. First of all, thanks for your comment again and acknowledgement of the ISO staff. So very, very much appreciate that, and appreciate again working with everyone too. It's been great as we've all been working through these challenges. On to the fee. So that is something that we would like to discuss at the June session. So it is one of the potential options that we'd like to throw out there. On that would obviously require a tariff change, but we would like to gather your input and feedback on a potential fee, application fee, what that might look like, if it was something that we'd move forward with on that. And so, so I think look forward to more of that in June. So if you have some thoughts on that, on what a fee might look like, how that would be implemented, please give some thought to that, because we'll discuss that in June for sure.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks, Ed.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. I think we can move to the next slide here. Okay. So, we're going to be implementing a near-term solution to, as we start looking at kind of some bigger connection process changes, as Rob mentioned in the June session, but kind of in the near term, we're looking at implementing a consistent kind of transparent set of these readiness factors to help our PMs, our ISO team, prioritize resources to project tasks to ensure projects that are, more advanced continue to move forward in a timely manner. So there's three factors that are identified on the slide here, starting with site control. So site control being the title or agreement to acquire title for land or a lease or option agreement to lease a facility site. Power plant application status, so whether the power plant has been filed, the application for power plant has been filed with the AUC, or if approval has been granted. So our PMs will use these readiness factors when prioritizing task work for their resources, their project assigned resources. This doesn't mean if your project does not have any of these readiness factors met, whether land has been, for example, if a SASR has been submitted and your project does not have site control yet, it doesn't mean that the ISO will not work on your project, will not advance your project forward. It just means that it may not progress as quickly compared to those that might be a little bit more ready or have met more readiness factors. So we're looking to factor that in, certainly as your projects progress, certainly we want you to keep your ISO PM informed as to whether or not any of these factors have been met, and we'll work that in with our resource allocation on projects. And certainly just want to send the message that, this is not an exact science, that our teams are doing their best to manage all of the tasks that they have in front of them to progress projects forward. And certainly our PMs may reach out to you and ask about some of these statuses and whether or not how your project is progressing relative to these activities and these factors. And certainly please provide us with any other information that you might find helpful in informing the ISO that your project is moving forward and advancing. That could be an offtake agreement or a power purchase agreement that you may have established with someone, etc. So these are ways in which we can help prioritize tasks on projects and prioritize our resources in order to advance things as a near-term solution as we're faced with this backlog.
Yeah, so maybe I'll just add on or just maybe just highlight again that I think again, given our current reality, we just simply don't have enough resources to spend a significant amount of time on all the projects. We'd love to just go out there and ramp up and hire resources, but that's not our current reality on that. And so we think that that this is an appropriate way in which we can help help manage our projects through and consider these factors and how we allocate our resources to our projects as a short-term measure, as we know that we'll go through the, and Rich is going to talk about our process for engagement, but we'll be looking obviously to, look at our material changes to the process and then look for implementation into 2023. So we do need a way in which we can bridge this for a period of time from that perspective. So I just wanted to add that and see.
Yeah, no, thanks, Rob. Okay, so I think that wraps up my speaking portion. I think we're on to the Q&A session.
Sounds good. I think we have a few hands raised, but I just wanted to encourage everyone, if you wanted to type in any questions, please use the Q&A function at the bottom. That way, all the other participants can see that as well, and they can upvote your questions if they're interested in the response.
Dan, just on that. So then questions that are typed in the chat, does everybody see those?
I'm just curious. No, it comes to the panelists and the host. So that's why I'm encouraging them to go into Q&A.
Okay. So then the questions that have come in through the chat, we should probably do a summary of those, right? So we have the response.
Yeah.
Maybe everyone can hear me. Is that?
Go through those as well.
Okay. So let's do the hands first, Jen.
Yep. Okay. James, if you want to unmute on your end.
Yeah, thank you. This is James Howland. I'm with Hardline Engineering. And I'll just echo the sentiments of my colleagues here. I think you guys are all doing a great job. So, that's very much appreciated. My comment today and I guess question is, I think there's noted and also discussed differences between the behind the fence process and the connection process. And some of those are driven by the tariff. Some of those are driven by the ISO process. And it's my observation that the differences in those projects really do tend to provide a bit of an advantage to BTFs in some aspects of being able to progress more quickly and realize inclusion criteria more quickly. And so I think, you know, I think that drives inefficiency into the process in general, because it's allowing the jockeying of position of different projects that's again driving a huge amount of rework on everyone that's kind of below that or above that. And so it's creating more work for the ISO. It's creating more work for market participants. And I'm thinking there's got to be an opportunity to some degree align those processes so that they can truck along at the same pace, be provided the same opportunities to progress along the same timelines. And I think by doing that, you probably eliminate some of the bouncing around of projects above and below other parties so that you'll eliminate some rework. So I guess that, you know, hopefully my question would be, you know, I assume that's something I guess you guys are looking at and hopefully will be addressing. And so it's maybe more of a comment than a question, but would I think that drives some efficiency into the process if it's looked at.
Yeah, no, thanks for that, James. We definitely are looking at that. And if I, you know, kind of understand that, you know, we've had some discussions on this in the past, but I understand that, work from an efficiency perspective, if you, the BTF projects from an inclusion perspective, because there is no transmission P&L associated with it, they can attain that rather quite quickly, resulting in lots of churn and restudies and impacts on other studies. And so to the extent that we can try to align the transmission and distribution ones, not only will we gain efficiencies, but the potential for the, you know, alignment, you know, of those, we obviously can create some alignment there. So that is one of the areas we would like to discuss, is project inclusion. I think that is one area that I think we want to put on the table.
It is. Too, so. Yep.
Excellent. Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, thanks, James.
Okay. And Akira, if you want to just unmute on your end and ask your question.
Akira Yamamoto from TransAlta. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Perfect. I agree. I think with the comments that, you might not feel it very much, but we do appreciate the ISO interconnection process and the challenges you face there. And we all in the industry want to see that process be as efficient as possible. That being said, I think we have to be a little bit careful and think about this whole process, because when we look at it, there are a lot of aspects that are embedded in tariff, a lot of things, and I can see in the chat there about Bill 22 and cell supply and export. We can only expect that volume of projects is likely to increase given the potential requirements for new generation as it kind of have our fleet change out. So I think it is really important to actually get on top of this and try and figure out what efficiencies we can create so that we can hopefully accommodate all this new generation growth that is likely to occur. That being said, what would be very helpful is I noted that you had that slide about the major tasks, just giving us a sense of what specific tasks are getting bottlenecked the most, because that would help us understand maybe where you drive out maybe some of the best efficiencies. In other words, if it, you know, a lot of, in some of the cases that I've seen, some of it is coming from, or some of the delays come from planning. Not necessarily from PMs or anything like that in the ISO process. So if we thought about, you know, a funding mechanism, but we just bought more PMs, but nothing actually changed on the planning side, we're no better off. So I think it does help us understand better what the root causes of all these delays are. And I do appreciate, you know, obviously the last 2 years have been a fairly unique instance of pandemic and all the uncertainties that have arisen there. And I like the fact that you have acknowledged that. I think we have to be cautious about trying to assume that pattern will continue in the future. In fact, it should probably lighten up. But that being said, we're going to be still faced with the challenge of increasing renewable development.
Yeah, no, thanks for that, Akiris. Steve, did you want to comment on the details of the individual tasks? But it's your, first of all, before you comment, so I think it's a great point, Akira, is finding the most effective way. And so looking at those that are the predominant critical path barriers and or things within the process that maybe don't provide a lot of value, if you will, on that. And so with that context, maybe Steve will bring it over to you.
Yeah, no, certainly, you know, just looking at the tasks, that kind of were assumed in this graphic really were the tasks primarily performed by the engineers, the customer access study engineers or the project engineers, that do the PEDUP, reviews and the functional spec, writing, Akira. So yeah, but by no means the project manager is certainly very busy, as well, and certainly they themselves have to sometimes decide what to work on, what they can delay a little bit in their world, but certainly they're doing all of the coordination of those activities.
And if I may, I can want to say one other thing. To the extent that we do see backlogs in the interconnection process, the problem is it does have a negative feedback loop. In other words, when developers recognize that it's taking extra long, they go into the queue even earlier.
Yeah.
And that, you know, obviously is the wrong incentive that you're, or wrong signal that you're providing. So it probably makes the problem even worse when that happens. Yeah. But yeah, I think that that's where, you know, seeking out efficiencies and removing out things that might be unnecessary really do help with that project certainty. And then you might have less of that hedging and people come in only when they need to come in, or as quickly as they need to come in.
Yeah, it's a good point, Kira. Yeah, we've certainly observed the same as well. Yeah.
Yeah, and so a takeaway that I'm thinking that Kira, on this one is for the June session, it sounds like it would be helpful if we had some data, if you will, or at least not necessarily data, but identification of what some of those key areas are, to understand those key, the key roadblocks that we have and where the critical path items are. So we'll take a look at that.
Thank you.
Thanks, Akira. We have another raised hand from Anthony. If you can go ahead and unmute on your end.
Hi there. Yeah, I guess my question was just a little bit bigger picture. It might be outside of the scope of the meeting, so I apologize if it is, but I was just thinking more along the lines of, is there a longer term plan to provide additional capacity in the south and maybe even central east for all this renewable generation that we can bring on? So I just wanted to speak to, or see if someone could speak to that quickly.
Yeah, no, that's a good question, Anthony. I'll speak to that at the end. That's kind of aligned with, in the introduction, where I was talking about congestion risk that we're seeing. And so I'll talk about what our plans are and how we're dealing with the congestion risk, and if you want to call it capacity for that area. So I'll save that one for the end.
Awesome. Thank you.
Okay, that's it for raised hands. We do have a typed question in the Q&A box. And again, just a reminder for everyone to put your typed questions in there, please, so that everyone can see them. We have a question from Jason Gillespie. He's asking, how do you see Bill 22, the self-supply and export provisions, impacting connection application numbers?
Impacting application numbers. So I guess that's a good question. I haven't really given, well, yeah, I guess I'm not sure. It may create for some, you know, an increase in application numbers. But I guess, yeah, so something that I maybe need to consider, as far as Bill 22, as far as the timing of that, as that advances through the legislation, obviously we're keeping an eye on what that looks like and what the potential impacts might be. So I think we'll need to be attuned to that as we're looking at defining our connection process. But I think the process change that we're looking to make, I think, I don't think Bill 22 is going to really affect, I think, what we land on from a process perspective. It may increase the volumes some, for sure, but not much else to comment on that, Jason.
Okay, thank you, Rob. So no other typed questions in there. Did you want to take a moment and kind of go through the chat questions that we received?
Yeah, so there's quite a few in there, so I'm not sure how to best handle that. Maybe Amir, because I think you've been the one answering them, but would you be able to do a high level review of the questions and then what some of the answers were, Amir?
Sounds good. So we had received a couple of questions. One of the questions, and maybe Steve, I will pass it to you to respond. It was on providing some information on why that inclusion criteria would have an impact in terms of re-studying and additional work for the ISO. So if you can cover that, that would be good.
Okay, I'm just scanning back to that one. So when a project meets inclusion criteria, when it meets inclusion criteria, that project gets dispatched. Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. You were covering that. Maybe I can cover the response that we have provided. Obviously, when a project goes to the inclusion criteria, this changes ISO's numerous study assumptions that we've had. So, for example, in the previous projects and some of the previous studies that we did not have assumed that project, now we will need to include that project in our study and go over that study again. So it causes a lot of re-studying and going back and forth between the projects when a project switches that inclusion criteria. One other question that we had was at what stage we get that inclusion criteria, and that inclusion criteria in terms of the stage, it really depends on the type of projects. For example, for connection project, it would be a stage 4 immediately after P&L approval. And one other question, Steve, if you could please answer this one, that would be good. There is a question on, can you please share the new connection process block diagram?
Okay. So we do have block diagrams. We call them quick reference guides. And they are developed for each of the three connection process types, the transmission connection, the behind the fence process, and the contract change process. And perhaps we can share that, Jen. I'm not sure how best we'd share that, but we'd share the links to where those exist on our website.
Yeah, can we just drop it in the,
yeah.
Drop it the link in the chat, in the, yep. Sorry, in the Q&A.
Yep, we can do that.
Okay. Okay, Amir, was there other ones in there?
There is another question that was just raised is, have the ISO considered hiring an independent efficiency expert to assist with the areas of improvement? And there is a comment that they are valuable folks in the oil and gas sectors that have optimized a lot of internal processes.
So that's something that we haven't done at this point. You know, we've done, you know, internally. So I think we'll get some good feedback in the June session and, hear from everyone and then we can consider that, you know, maybe going forward too. So it's a good comment. And so thanks for that. We'll give that consideration.
Thanks, Rob. We have two more questions, or a few more questions that are raised in the Q&A. Jen, would you like me to cover those?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. There is a question about the automation tools, and it's has the ISO looked into the automation tools to help to manage the workload? And these are, I guess the question is referring to tools that are streamlining some of the work, for example, the study work that we do.
Yeah, so, our team does, you know, from the study tools perspective, you know, they do utilize, you know, tools that are, you know, automation tools that are available, you know, for them, I think in helping the efficiencies and time perspective. So, that, you know, there may be other ones out there that we can continue to look at. I don't see the automation tools as, you know, as being a material impact to the way we do things right now. I think there's some other more fundamental, reasons, for, you know, the length, if you will, and inefficiencies within our process. But it's something that we can take back to our engineering team. So that'd be something we're probably take away and look at the engineering side.
Definitely, like if that is referring to things such as the Python programming to, you know, streamline the studies, like for example, if you are working on 10Ks, it would make sense to have automation tools to run the planning assessment on those 10Ks instead of running individual assessment. These are the things that the ISO has been doing for a long time, and we continue to do and evolve. So we are doing those, but still, given some of the challenges that we have highlighted here, we have all of those challenges that was raised here in terms of the timeline and the volume and all of that. Even though we are definitely utilizing those automation tools in our assessment. There are two more questions. One is what percentage of megawatt, and it's kind of, the question is referring to percentage in terms of the megawatt split. What percentage of the projects right now in our list are behind the fence? I don't know, Steve, if we have that stat right handy to share, or if we need to look
into that. Yeah, I don't have that one handy up. I'll see if I can get it, and if I can, I'll answer it in the Q&A.
Okay. And then I guess the last question that I see here is, are microgeneration projects included in the stats that we presented today?
Right. So from a connection process perspective, we only see projects that are 5 megawatts and greater, as just a general practice. So if it's a DER project, for example, if it's 5 megawatts or greater, it needs to come in through the behind the fence process, as we do science SCADA. Yeah.
So the thing to add to that, Steve, would be, so I would predominantly say the microgen, no, would not be within this.
Yep.
The only potential would be is if a distribution company decided that because of the microgen additions that it triggered a contract change, maybe at the substation, that they might need to change their STS at the pod level, then the DFO would submit a contract change that.
Yep. But,
okay, thanks, Amir. I think we can type in that response when we get those stats, and we'll share that with you when we receive those. We do have another raised hand, so I'm just going to hop over there. Joe Peters, if you want to go ahead and unmute on your end and ask your question.
Yeah, thank you. I'll just start by echoing the previous comments. Thanks for the huge efforts of the ISO, and thanks for bringing this initiative forward. So one thing that I really appreciated in what I saw here was your list of readiness criteria, site control, AUC application filed, AUC approval, and so on. We have a bit of a chicken and egg situation, I think, where the proponent of the project also needs to move the project toward a FID. And one of the challenges that, I'm sure you're aware of it, but I'll just highlight it again, is that the proponents also have a similar list of issues that need to be addressed before they can commit to the project. And I think some of the frustration that the ISO experiences, you know, that you, if I can paraphrase it and just say, you know, are you building this project or not, kind of thing. And but the big part of that is understanding the risks associated with the ISO and congestion impacts. That's one of the challenges that I'm seeing, that investors, understanding that investors are typically from out of country and may not be familiar with all these processes. And you've got, they want to understand the congestion, what are the risks associated with this, and at what time do I have everything I need to proceed from a grid connection point of view. So not really any answers for you there. Maybe something to think about as you
proceed. No. Yeah, thanks, Joel, for your acknowledgement at the beginning, but yeah, for that question as well. Yeah, and that's something that I would love to be part of our discussion, at our workshop, is how we can best do that, because we're obviously, seeing congestion and that presents risk. And of course, in our framework with no transmission rights within Alberta, it is a risk that the developers need to understand. And so we want to try to find ways in which we can provide that congestion risk such that the market participants can make their financial decisions on that. So, yep, totally get it, Joe, and something that we can try to find ways within our process to mitigate that.
Great. Yeah, thank you.
Okay, thanks, Joe. There are no other hands raised, and we're just following up on that one stat, so I think we can move on to the next section here.
Okay, well, sounds good. That's my section, so I will get going here. So here we just want to talk a bit about the streamlining initiative that the ISO is taking on in 2022 and into 2023, and talk a little bit about how we're going to engage in June. So really just to set up the June engagement so everyone can understand how best to provide input and feedback to the ISO as we kick off this initiative. So the ISO, as the ISO and the industry move together into the connection process streamlining effort, it's going to be important to set an understanding of the challenges we're facing and to set objectives and goals. Steve has spent time earlier in the presentation setting out some of the ISO's challenges, and this can be summarized really as growing project volumes and complexity, which are expected to continue, is leading to a resource imbalance into increasing project time lengths. The key objective that we're looking to resolve here is to streamline the connection process to drive efficiencies both internally and externally, minimize non-essential work, and focus our resource efforts. We also need to be aligned and understand the goals of streamlining the connection process. The primary goals of streamlining the connection process will be to provide greater efficiency and schedule certainty for customers. We want to reduce red tape in the connection process. For instance, if there are any steps or documents that are not essential, we should be looking to reduce red tape where possible. We want to optimize change management. Here, we'll be looking to reduce churn brought on by project change proposals and other change impacts. We want to minimize rework and duplicate work between projects, for instance, in studies, in order to avoid restudies efforts. And overarching, we want to be able to streamline the process, optimize our efforts in order to align with resource capacity. Ultimately, we need a clear, defined path forward to meet our longer-term objective of streamlining the connection process. We'll be engaging with stakeholders in June to explore streamlining change options. This will be a consultation with full stakeholder input in the development process. The ISO will be presenting initial concepts and soliciting feedback and industry ideas. Through the summer and early fall, the ISO will assess stakeholder feedback and build out concepts. Following would be a late fall session to present a final set of initiatives and collect final feedback. We would then finalize details in an implementation plan by year end and look to implement into 2023. So here's an overall timeline of the streamlining initiative through January. Obviously, we're kicking off today in May, and we'll be hosting the June session. We'll plan to host that June session in the last week of June. We anticipate an additional session or sessions will be required in late fall, and that will be dependent on how many initiatives we determine to move forward. Come January, we'll be looking to start implementing portions of the streamlined connection process changes. Keep in mind, there will be different complexities involved with potential solutions, and the ISO will be assessing if there are any quick wins for implementation. The ISO considers this an important engagement on the connection process and would encourage in-person attendance at a World Cafe session in Calgary. We'll be bringing up a poll question at the end of the session, which will ask, would you attend a stakeholder session in person? The ISO will make a decision on an in-person session based on stakeholder interest. If the ISO goes forward with an internal in-person event, with an in-person event, participants will be able to provide comments if you're unable to attend.
And Rich, just before you go on that, I just want to throw out there that I personally believe that an engagement session of this magnitude, I think in person is important for that. So I just wanted to throw that out there. I do recognize, obviously, we're obviously still, going through the pandemic. There's different comfort levels and whatnot. But this is something that I personally think the highest value that we're going to get is going to be through in person. So I just wanted to context you to where I'm leaning and thinking towards from that perspective.
Thanks, Rob. So for the June session, we plan to host multiple tables or stations in order to collect participant feedback. The first area for exploration will be market participant challenges and opportunities. We'll be asking, what are the key market participant challenges? As we move forward, we'll be looking to provide improved schedule certainty for customers. The second area is readiness of projects to enter the process and associated certainty. As we've heard earlier in the presentation, uncertainty causes rework. So we'll be talking about project change proposals, project readiness, on holds, and cancellations. Third will be volume and complexity of SASR applications. And next will be process rework and inefficiencies. We'll explore what are the key items that cause rework. Lastly, we'll explore minimizing unnecessary connection project steps as it relates to red tape. So a question we'll be asking, do we need to keep doing everything in the connection process and still maintain reliability of the connection?
Hey, Rich, would you mind just on that readiness for projects that are, would you mind just kind of, you rattle off a few things there. I just wouldn't mind just repeating that just for people.
Yeah, so for readiness, I think, as we mentioned, uncertainty is causing rework in the process. So we'll be talking about change proposals, project readiness, on holds, and cancellations.
What about, I know we've heard about project inclusion criteria. Is that kind of involved in this associated certainty piece? Is that where you see that fitting?
Yeah, we see that there too. And I'll be talking about that just on the next slide as well.
Okay, thanks, Rich.
No problem. So this is not an exhaustive list. We realize there may be other items that folks would like the ISO to consider. So if you can please share any other tables or stations for consideration, please share those in the Q&A or send those by June 3rd. You can send those to Amir Motivetti, and we'll put that email in the chat for you. So we're excited to hear about everyone's ideas for this, for streamlining the connection process. Some of the ideas that the ISO would like to explore are listed here. First of all, cluster studies. As you've heard, there's a record amount of generation megawatts in the project list right now, and the connection process wasn't built to handle this volume of generation. Obviously, generators impact each other more and impact the system more. So cluster studies support the challenge of volume and complexity of SASR applications and the impact on congestion studies. Initial thoughts on cluster studies would be intaking all SASRs received over a defined period of time and studying everything together. Another potential enhancement is strengthening application requirements. This would increase project certainty at the connection process front end. So some of the ideas here could be requiring site control as a requirement of entering the connection process. It could be requiring refundable or non-refundable application fees. Of note, implementation, as Rob mentioned earlier, of application fees may require some form of tariff approval. We're also exploring a project inclusion criteria move. As discussed earlier, project inclusion criteria is used to determine which projects in an area are included in a specific engineering study assessment for a particular project. The current inclusion criteria today, we've already discussed where those key points are for inclusion criteria. So we think moving inclusion criteria to earlier in the connection process would provide some positive impacts. However, we need to work this with the cluster studies initiative, and we will need to proceed the project inclusion criteria move with the cluster study approaches.
Rich, I just want to provide some context. I think in the audience, we probably have people at different levels of understanding of cluster studies. And so for the June session, our team will put together more conceptually what we're thinking about from a cluster studies so you can have something to think about, and then we can obviously have some discussion on that. Just for some background, if you will, I mentioned at the beginning that a lot of the other ISOs within North America are faced with the same challenges, of course, that we're going through. And many of them have moved to a cluster study methodology. Right now, when we do our requests, you can think of them as being done in a serial manner. So when you submit a system access service request, it comes in, we trigger it, we kick off a project team, and then you go through the process, and you have 300 of those all going at different paces and times, and they move forward, they pull back, they change. And so you can see the dynamics with that and the challenge that we have. And so we want to thoughtfully explore the cluster studies. We have been meeting with other ISOs to understand the cluster studies and the value that they're providing with them too. So that's really what we want to talk about when it comes to that. But we'll come together with a little more conceptual so you can see what we're thinking about from that perspective. So I just wanted to provide that context.
Thanks, Rob. Yeah, that's great context. Okay, so we'll now just move into the Q&A session for the connection project process streamlining. So Jen, is there any questions in the chat? And just a note before we get into the Q&A session, please bring your ideas for June. Let's avoid solutioning today. We're really looking for everybody's great ideas as we move into the June session.
Thanks, Rich. That sounds great. There is one question that was typed in from Erica. I see Amir's responding, but maybe we would take this one and just share it out loud. How would a cluster approach impact cost allocation?
Great question, Erica. So thanks for that.
obviously the ISO tariff is what determines the cost allocation to customers. So I don't see the cluster studies impacting the cost allocation side of it. What the cluster studies would effectively do is allow us to study projects within a region together and to understand the impacts. So we'd effectively kind of be doing one major study with all the projects and understand the impact each of them would have. And then moving that forward with the connection alternative for that customer. And of course, then the cost allocation of the connection alternative would be applied by our tariff. Some of the benefits that I can see is now if there is a system need as a result of the generation moving forward within that, I think it allows for tighter coordination between understanding what's a more holistic system potential need to address congestion on that side.
Sounds good. Any other comments on that or good, Rich?
Yeah. Thanks, Rob.
Okay. Question from Akira. So generally the cluster study approach is what makes those other interconnection process in U.S. jurisdictions like PGM bad in comparison with Alberta. Be very cautious about considering this approach since PGM is clearly in a difficult position right now with a very ugly change in process. So he is sharing that he doesn't maybe see this helping. General feedback there. So I don't know if you have any comments on that, Rob.
Yeah, just a little something. I mean, thanks for that, Akira. Yeah, PGM is going through, I think, I don't remember how many thousands of applications are there. They have quite a rush going on over there right now. And then obviously a much broader area and larger system to manage with that. So, we are going to be meeting with PGM to better understand theirs. Our team just met with Midwest ISO to better understand how they're implementing clusters and what are some of the values and, to them, and what are some things that they would do differently, from that side of things. So it would be well thought out. So that's what we want to move forward with. And as far as engaging with you to say, here's an option, let's consider this and let's hear your thoughts on that. So we'll be definitely very thoughtful through that, Akira. And, if that's not where we go, that's maybe not where we go. We definitely want to have some creative ideas out there, to find the efficiencies on that. So.
Great answer, Rob. Yes, okay. So another question here from Laura in the typed Q&A. Are you considering incorporating grid analytics into regular connection studies process to ensure we get the most valuable capacity out of the existing system?
Yeah, so that's another really great question, Laura. Maybe just to help some of the others. So we do congestion analysis studies. And right now when we do them on the connection side, they're done on, let's say, really a needs basis and an exception basis. They do require significant resources to do them. It's a relatively new enhancement that the ISO has developed, internally to do the congestion assessments. And they're obviously highly valuable. And I think they're, from a developer's perspective, helps understand the risk, as Joe pointed out earlier. We need to talk about that if there's the value in that and where we put it in the connection process. From that, there's a resource as we look to design our process. Then the next piece of that, will fall upon our team to understand what internal resources are required to implement a new and improved connection process. And be able to, articulate that through our budget review process and obviously, the resources that we need to get them approved if we need additional resources. And so on the congestion assessment side, I guess what I'm trying to say is if we chose to make it part of the regular connection studies, I can see a resource additions that would be required through that. So we just need to be thoughtful through that. And if it's a priority that the industry thinks is where we need to go, then that would be great feedback for us to move forward with. And I can incorporate that in our budget review process.
Perfect. Thank you. One more here from Jason Gillespie. Would applications in the queue be moved into a new process in early 2023 when this is rolled out? Or is the ISO envisioning some sort of hybrid in the short term?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I don't have an answer to that, Jason, other than, yeah, that would be a transitionary thing that we need to think through. And obviously, we need to carefully think through how we would do that. So if we move to the cluster studies, or I guess any process changes, we need to think through the transitioning. So whether it's cluster studies or just any other new process piece, we need to think carefully through the transition piece on that piece. And so that'd be something that, Rich, we should probably, you know, we'll need to note that and think how we want to engage on that too.
Yeah, that'll all be part of implementation planning and transition planning.
Okay, I think that is it for Q&A here, unless there's any final questions or anyone wants to raise a hand and share a thought or anything. We have a few minutes here if there's any final comments or questions.
Yep. Maybe what I'll do, Jan, is I'll flip to, you know, as I mentioned at the beginning, I'll loop back and touch on the congestion risk piece. And then we can open up the floor for final comments and then look to close the session. Does that work?
Awesome. Yeah. And I'll be sharing the poll as well during that time. So if everyone can just take a few minutes and share their thoughts on that.
Okay. Good. Okay. Yeah. And of course, as we were preparing for this session, I was generally thinking that congestion risk would be, a topic of keen interest, and of course it was. You know, I heard it through several of the questions today on that. So we, you know, do acknowledge that there is, you know, pockets of congestion on the 138 kV system, specifically in the south and east part of the province, and you know, that's not surprising, especially as we see developers looking to connect. You know, what I'll say is, you know, large generation on the 138 kV system. You know, the 138 kV system it's typically designed for around 100 megawatts. You know, that's typically what you're going to get on 138, some higher, some lower, you know, just obviously there are some differences there. So when you are looking to connect large generators, you know, the 100 megawatts, you know, we have some 120 and, you know, some, you know, in the 80 range, you start to now run into potential congestion. And so that's something that obviously that developers need to understand when you are connecting a large generator to the 138 kV part of the system. And also large DERs. So it's the DERs are, you know, we get some small ones, 5 megawatts, but we also get a large number of them are 20 megawatts, 17 megawatts. And so of course that also has an impact up onto the transmission system, you know, particularly the 138 kV. So given what you, if you recall back to that one slide earlier where we showed the 2015 generation interconnections and the 2021 or 2022, I don't remember the date that it was taken on, but, you know, so it's not a surprise that we see the congestion issues there. And so it creates for the challenges, you know, that we have today. And also it's contributing, and as I think James mentioned earlier, or I'm not sure if it was James, but a difficult connection process when you have that higher congestion risk as well. And so ISO, you know, obviously we look at that, and determine if we need to trigger system developments, in order to, mitigate the congestion. And of course, that's our planning mandate that the ISO has, is to plan, for, you know, under normal conditions for all in Merit Energy, to flow. And so we put our planning hats on there. And so with this congestion risk, we are advancing, two 138 kV system projects. So they're actively moving right now. One is in the Tabor area. And so we have congestion on the 610 line. Some of you may know that line number, may not, but it's in the Tabor area. And there's another 138 kV project that we are also advancing, and it's near the Westbrooks substation, and that's the 853 line. And both of those projects are driven by the generation interconnections, or they're being triggered, if you will, by the generation interconnections. There's some large T connect and lots of distribution connection as well. The first one I want to point out in the Tabor area is in our LTP, but the pace of generation and where they're developing, the one in the Westbrooks area is something that was not identified in the LTP. So we're trying to be agile and flexible here in moving forward at as quick as pace as we can from that perspective. We are also going to be, we are actively working on two other larger 240 kV system projects that we are working on. Again, one of them is in our LTP, and that's our southeast plan. So you can look within our southeast plan there. And that's going to look to address congestion in that southeast area, as well as and the study consultants will know this as well. But we have, with the generation development in the CBW line, we're starting to see potential low voltages in the Bowmanton area at the Bowmanton substation. So we'll be looking to address that in that larger southeast plan. And we are working on a project that was not identified in the LTP, but given the generation development in the Stavely area, we are looking at a 240 kV project in that area. And that is not identified in our LTP. And again, these are all based upon advancements in generation. That area is really looking, there's so much generation on the 138 kV system that we're looking to need an outlet onto the 240 kV system in that area to help mitigate that. And so we're working really hard on these files. We will plan a system update session to the industry. We'll provide that later on this year, just on where we're at from a system planning perspective. Just one other thing that we're also working on. So obviously we believe in, you know, optimizing the grid is really important in managing costs. And so we are looking at enhancing our strategies on how we can avoid or defer system costs. And one of the things that we're doing is piloting a new grid optimization technology. And so these are effectively modular power flow control devices that we're going to be piloting this year. And we're going to be piloting it on the 610 line. And so it'll enable us to control the power flow, on lines. And so we'll pilot that. And it's really a proof of concept. We'll pilot it for a couple months. Once we understand the proof of concept, then we'll take that information internally and see how we can make that another tool in our tool belt, to be able to be more responsive to when potential congestion is upon us too. So those are some of the things that we're working on, kind of directionally on that. So that's really all I kind of wanted to talk about on the congestion risk piece. And I do think we need to understand in the connection process when we engage on it, the congestion assessments, which Laura asked about earlier, it's all kind of tied together from that perspective. So with that, I will see if anyone has any last questions. I'm happy to entertain any questions anyone may have.
Huh? Nothing came in so far.
Yeah, one just came in.
Oh, Jorge. Renee, no heat raised hands.
Yeah.
Jorge asked, can you see that?
Yeah, I got it. Yeah. Okay. So Jorge, so good question. Dynamic line rating. So we do have an initiative internally at the ISO at which we're starting to scope out, dynamic line ratings, and what our plan is going to be. So that is an optimization tool, that we believe has merit in us looking at investigating that. So we're going to scope that out this year and we'll provide more of an update later on this year on where the ISO is at with that.
Perfect. You actually got two for one there because that's the next question as well.
All
right. Clycar asks, where can I find information on these new transmission projects you just mentioned?
Yeah, so those ones, so Clyde, we'll be coming out with a system update session in the fall is when we're planning on doing that. I'll have to, do a little bit of a takeaway here on. So there's the two that are in the LTP. And then there's two that are new that we're working on. So I'll need to take that away and see about how we get that out into to share that with the public so you're aware of those. So we'll take that away, Jen.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Last question here from Joe Slater. If the power flow technology looks to be beneficial, will the ISO look to integrate the potential for this type of technology when doing congestion studies in other areas?
Yeah, I'm just making sure I understand your question, Joe. So you're right. So we'll do the proof of concept. If we think it's something that makes sense for us, then we would look to integrate that new technology in areas at which we see that it can help, mitigate congestion or minimize congestion or defer, large transmission builds for a period of time as well, too. So they're modular. The technology we're looking at is modular as well. So, and they have some options for them to be, mobile as well, too. So there's some flexibility within that I think can be a valuable tool for us.
Sounds good. Jason asks, will you be circulating the final June session info to people in this session? The website says more to come right now.
Yep. So more to come on that. Our team's working on the material right now, from that perspective.
Yeah. And we'll have that registration out 3 weeks in advance. You guys will be able to register to participate. So all that content will be available on the stakeholder engagement page.
And I think Jen, I think Rich mentioned it's the last week in June. I'm not sure we finalized on a date yet, but you can tentatively block that week.
That's right.
In your schedules.
Yep. No other raised hands, no other Q&A.
Okay. Good. Well, there's the poll, so please take time to look at the poll. It'll be important to get your input, for the how we move forward with the next session on that. So with that, I do want to thank Jen. As usual, she's done an awesome job with us helping through the stakeholder sessions. Steve and Rich for presenting with us today. And Amir, welcome to the world of connections. It's very engaging and exciting for us at this time of change. So thank you for that. And I very much look forward to our next steps and the opportunity to engage with everyone in June and to really create some meaningful change. It's exciting for us on that. So with that, we'll say thanks everyone and have a great day.